Essay 64. Summary and review of the biography by Kerry Pendergast, 1971 to 1978. The Life of Myron Evans, www.cisp-publishing.com, 2011. This is an excellent biography by the Royal Society Hawksbee medalist, Kerry Pendergast. It is pleasantly written and readable. In this essay, I give a summary of the material for the book for the sake of historical accuracy at university level. My time in Pontardawe Grammar School is summarized in the first volume of my autobiography. There are momentous changes taking place in physics, and as a result, some misguided people may try to distort the facts. They are given here. This material will be developed in further volumes of my autobiography. I was educated at University College of Wales, Aberystwyth, in the natural sciences, TRIPOS. I was awarded the Matthews Prize for best first-year results in chemistry in 1969. In 1971, I graduated the top first in chemistry and was informed by professorial staff that this was one of the best degrees in the history of the college, if not the best. I was awarded a Dr. Samuel Williams studentship for a PhD, supervised by Professor Mansell Davies. In 1972, I was awarded a French government scholarship in open competition to work in Nice and Nancy at CNRS laboratories. I published several papers before I graduated PhD, the first student to do so in the history of the college, and graduated PhD in 1974. Professor Mansell Davies later wrote to me to inform me that this was one of the two best PhDs he had supervised. My external examiner was Professor John Rowlingson, FRS, of Oxford, later knighted. In that year, I was awarded three prestigious postdoctoral fellowships in open competition, SRC, ICI Imperial, and NRCC Canada, to work with the Nobel laureate Hertzberg. I took up the SRC Fellowship at Oxford with Professor Rawlinson's group. In 1975, I was awarded a prestigious Junior Research Fellowship of Woolston College in open competition and a large SRC grant which I took up at Aberystwyth, where I expected to be awarded tenure on promises of such by professorial staff. I started the BBC Hall of Fame group at Aberystwyth in 1975. When Mansell Davies asked me to supervise Gareth Evans. Obviously, there was plenty of confidence in my ability and my prospects of a lectureship or tenured research fellowship at Aberystwyth. I returned there on these promises of tenure. Winning five prestigious fellowships was already unprecedented in British academic history. I was on friendly terms with all staff. Tenure should certainly have been awarded in 1975 when I returned to Aberystwyth from Oxford. I had certainly been promised tenure after 2 years at Oxford. Both Mansell Davies and John Thomas were very proud of me at that point, and Gareth Evans recalls this well. As a Welsh speaker, my proper place was Aberystwyth. All I wanted was a tenured research fellowship, a very modest amount of salary. I was already bringing in funding to Aberystwyth. As 1975 turned into 1976, tenure was not forthcoming, and due to a quiet nature, I did not press for the promise to be honoured. I could see that tenure was awarded without competition to strengthen John Thomas's group. This type of thing was not to my liking. None of those awarded tenure had won an open competition. I had won five. I began to get anxious and applied for a Ramsay Memorial Fellowship, which I won in 1976 in open competition. This is one of the premier fellowships of Great Britain, and Mansell Davies was delighted. He told me I had won it by a mile. That was all very well, but no mention was made of tenure, and there was no reason for not awarding me tenure, funds being available. I began to build up the BBC Hall of Fame group, and it established an international reputation. This was recognized by the award to me in January 1978, of the Scientiae Doctor, and in the same year the prestigious Harrison Memorial Prize for the Royal Society of Chemistry. The professorship, however, forgot its promise of tenure. purely because John Thomas was building up his own group and consuming the funds. That is the real reason for this broken promise. In 1977, I was offered a lectureship at Swansea by Howard Purnell via Mansell Davies, who was clearly unhappy about it. I found out why shortly later, because the same post was advertised even though it had been offered to me. I found this to be atrociously corrupt and shocking because candidates were invited who did not have a chance. Great pressure was applied to get me to move to Swansea. That was corruption by a professor, and I resent it deeply to this day. Shortly after I became the youngest doctor in scientiae in modern history, I won a Circ Advanced Fellowship, being graded top of my year. Some staff at the EDCL, notably Phil Cadman, saw that Purnell was about to ruin my career and group by demoralizing the whole setup, so advised me to apply for this 5-year fellowship. I was told that I'd won it again by a mile, graded top of my year in chemistry in the whole of Britain. I decided to take up this prestigious fellowship, specifically intended by the government for tenure, and my 6th in open competition. Purnell became bitterly angry and decided to ruin my career just because I wanted to stay at Aberystwyth. He was one of the most vindictive men I have ever met, and that says a lot. Gareth Evans witnessed all of these events firsthand. So the professorial staff were playing around with my career in a deeply reprehensible way. Recently, I learned that the DSC is intended to be a distinction higher than a full professor, and I was certainly ready for a research professorship in 1978. My all-round skills were such as to become a coordinator for all Europe in 1980, and to found and coordinate a European-wide group at the National Physical Laboratory. The latter wanted me to go there and nominated me for the Harrison Memorial Prize. In 1976, I had already opened a Gordon conference in front of several Nobel laureates in Holderness School, New Hampshire. I had opened another conference in the Dublin Institute for Advanced Studies and had begun cooperation with Trinity College Dublin. There was nothing wrong with my lecturing abilities or any other skill. The blame for lack of tenure and great damage to my career lies with the professorial staff of that era, Howard Purnell, John Thomas, and to a lesser extent, Mansell Davies, who had lost influence and retired in 1978. In the same year, I was invited to a reception by Principal Sir Goronwy Daniels and Lady Daniels, granddaughter of Lloyd George. The principal was very pleased with my DSC and clearly expected John Thomas to give me tenure. I know now that I should have become a tenured research professor, and that would have saved the EDCL from closure because of the productivity and reputation of my group. The CNTI doctor is a higher distinction than a personal chair. That is an undeniable fact. By 1978, I had already published 60 papers, the lifetime output of Mansell Davies, who was a full professor. My lecturing skills were already acknowledged to be outstanding. The lack of tenure was due to careerism and greed among the professorial staff. They simply abdicated duty and broke promises. Since then, Aberystwyth has deteriorated sharply into insignificance, and my work is making the biggest impact in the world of physics. Only the worst bigot would deny these facts. They are all witnessed firsthand by Gareth Evans and are written elegantly in the biography by Kerry Pendergast. www.aias.us. In 1978, the chair and head of Department of Chemistry became vacant in Aberystwyth when John Thomas announced that he was moving to Cambridge. No one was particularly happy about this because the whole EDCL had been used to support him in a bid for FRS, and he was a Welsh speaker. He had arrived from Bangor in 1969 with J. O. Williams and Urwin Evans, two more Welsh speakers, who were given tenure without competition and without winning an open competition. They were tenured as researchers, the kind of post that I wanted and had earned many times over. All the appointments to tenure by John Thomas from 1969 to 1978 were made internally. I remember David Parry being given tenure out of the blue one day. No doubt these were fine people, but I felt a deepening sense of injustice because the BBC Hall of Fame group was being ignored simply because of the personal ambitions of John Thomas, and he was a very ambitious man. In 1978, Gareth Evans won a University of Wales fellowship in open competition, thus strengthening the Hall of Fame group, but he too was denied tenure. He deserved it as much as anyone. My group was joined by Colin Reid. I tried to apply for the job of head of department, but was prevented from even applying by Mansell Davies. This was one of the strange things about him. I now know that Jeremy Jones had probably been selected for head of department in the same way as I had been offered a lectureship, i.e. Jeremy Jones was offered the post in private, and the same post was advertised. The same Howard Pennell was on the interview committee for the head of department, and it was probably another of Pennell's doings. A sure sign of this was the furious anger of J.O. Williams, who was shortlisted but not appointed. He probably never had a chance. 2 or 3 years later he left for a chair at UMIST, and later became principal of NEWI, now Owain Glyndwr University. I did not tell Mansell Davies that I'd applied for a DSC, because he would have tried to prevent me earning it. So this was a very strange atmosphere. Mansell Davies retired in September 1978. Throughout 1978, Pennell put pressure on Jones to force me to move to Swansea. The notorious letters from Jones began to arrive on my desk. The first one of them is in the Historical Source Documents, HSD section, of www.aias.us. I found Jones to be arrogant and insulting from the beginning, prone to ugly outbursts of temper, and totally unsuited for the job that had probably been rigged for him. I decided to stay at Aberystwyth despite the threats that my career would be destroyed. The BBC Hall of Fame group was subjected to all kinds of abuse, most of it illegal. Despite this, the group outproduced the entire EDCL combined from 1978 to 1983, see HSD documents. I earned a large grant from CERC in 1978, maybe £250,000 in today's money, and that grant supported by CERC advanced fellowship. I formed a sub-millimeter group with Gareth Evans, Mauro Ferrario and Colin Reid, and started cooperation with Grigolini and Coffey. Any competent head of department would have supported the group with tenure for Gareth Evans and myself. However, Jones was incompetent and under pressure from Pennell to have my career destroyed in revenge. Our laboratory was removed almost immediately and left empty for years, as witnessed by Professors Vige and Muskiki in the HSD section. The CERC government apparatus was piled up in a corridor for almost a year. Colin Reid resigned in protest. This was an illegal breach of contract with the government, one of several breaches of contract. Gareth Evans and myself, and one more postdoctoral, were forced into a very small room with no windows. Under these conditions, I won the prestigious Meldola Medal of the Royal Society of Chemistry in 1979, and was ranked joint winner of the Marlowe Medal. The actual medal was given to the other winner because I already had the Meldola. This is an unprecedented triple in the history of the Royal Society of Chemistry. I organized the European Molecular Liquids Group from about 1979 onwards, and founded it with George Chantry and others at the National Physical Laboratory in 1980. I became the first European coordinator and also a US NSF advisor by invitation. I discussed the formation of an EMLG laboratory with Tam Dayal, MP, Labour Party Shadow Minister for Education. Again, any competent head of department would have supported these efforts by tenure. As it was, Jones became bitterly hostile and Mauro Ferrario left for Cambridge, where he worked with Ian MacDonald, later an FRS. Eventually, I decided to take an empty office and laboratory in order to resume work, and was subjected to a furious tirade of vulgar verbal abuse from Jones. When I returned from the Meldola lecture at Oxford, he had placed a sealed letter on my desk asking me to go to work in Oxford. I deeply resented his whole attitude. As a result of his incompetence, staff resignations began, one after the other. Professor Harry Heller, Professor J. O. Williams, and his own postdoctoral, Dr. Friedman. This was the beginning of the end for the EDCL. He stepped up pressure to have me leave, and in 1982 or 1983, I was subjected to a 3-hour session of vicious verbal abuse by Professors Jeremy Jones and Graham Williams. Gareth Evans witnessed me emerging from the interrogation. In 1983, I won 2 more fellowships in open competition, my 7th and 8th. 2 independent University of Wales fellowships at Bangor and Swansea. Gareth Evans won a prestigious CERC Advanced Fellowship in open competition in about 1981. In an act of mindless vindictiveness, Gareth was denied tenure because he was part of my group. This is an account of the gross corruption in the EDCL from 1978 to 1983. It was closed in about 1988 and collapsed after I was forced to move to Bangor. On September the 26th, 1983, I saved it from destruction by a fire started by David Parry accidentally. In 1983, I took up one of my University of Wales fellowships at University College of North Wales, Bangor. By that time, I had completed about 140 papers, reviews, and books, as in the Omnia Opera on www.aias.us. When I arrived at Bangor, I found that the expensive and delicate Apollo laser had been dumped on the floor of a lecture theatre, so a great deal of time was wasted in getting the apparatus into order. Eventually, the interferometer was transferred back to Gareth Evans at Aberystwyth and the Apollo laser to the University of Pisa. The incompetence of the administration resulted in this deliberately imposed chaos. I also had to spend time re-establishing a link to the UMRCC CDC 7600 supercomputer from Bangor. As a university fellow, I was free to do my own work, but nonetheless, I was pressurized into tutoring. My office was the corner of a 6th-floor block, and it was suddenly removed by a head of department called Boyd. So I had to work in a junk room without windows. I was on very good terms with the staff at Bangor, who were acutely embarrassed by Boyd. His department was graded the lowest in Britain when I left in 1985. In this junk room I greeted incredulous visitors from overseas to a Nuffield workshop that I arranged. Kerry also visited this junk room once, where I sat between piles of computer output. In these conditions, I produced the papers of about 1983 to 1985 on the Omnia Opera. A pattern emerges of dedicated work under appalling professorial administration, heartily disliked by the tenured staff itself. I got on fine with all the non-professorial tenured staff and was a warden at St. Mary's College with its Coven Williams originals. During this time I won 4 more fellowships in open competition, a Humboldt Fellowship, an IBM Fellowship in the University of Newcastle upon Tyne, a Leverhulme Trust Fellowship, and a Pilcher Senior Fellowship of the University of Wales. These were all won from the junk room, a grotesque experience. I was also awarded a visiting academic position at Trinity College Dublin, part of the Oxbridge system historically. So that brought the total of fellowships to 12. The Vice-Chancellor of Newcastle, Professor David Whiffin, FRS, thought that my work was the best since Debye. Therefore, the professorial-level administration at Aberystwyth and Bangor was corrupt to the point of not even being able to recognise what others readily did. It was particularly disliked by the Welsh speakers at Bangor, but disliked heartily by all staff, Welsh and English alike. In that system, power was concentrated in the hands of the head of department, a fatal weakness. Boyd's department was closed shortly thereafter. At Aberystwyth, Gareth Evans made the best of things and did excellent work discovering new crystal growth effects and far infrared features. In 1985, I transferred to University College Swansea on a University of Wales Pilcher Senior Fellowship and arranged a covenant between Swansea and Rio de Janeiro. Again, I had to re-establish a link to the UMRCC CDC 7600. This was a very productive time, but once more the administration failed to support or even understand it. This time in the guise of Dutton and Gray Morgan. The covenant was not honoured by Swansea. The professorial administration began to complain pettily of the amount of postage I was using to send out off-prints requested from colleagues, and eventually I was hauled in for another interrogation, this time with Dutton and Gray Morgan. I deeply resented their unscholarly and insolent attitudes. I had just heard that I'd been offered an IBM professorship at Kingston, New York, by Enrico Clementi, and I told them this in the middle of the interrogation. Then, in September 1986, it was time to emigrate to the United States. I arrived at Kingston in early October and was given an office in the Clementi environment with the rank of full professor. The other professor was Rutan. The CDC 7600 code was ported over on magnetic tape and transformed into double precision Fortran. Clementi allowed me a lot of latitude as a professor, and again I was very productive, as recorded in the Omnia Opera papers of this era. I had unlimited computer time on the IBM 3084 and IBM 3096S, and I began to do animation work, then a new feature of computing. I met my first wife, Laura, at IBM, and she was always a great help. I eventually returned for work with David Hayes at Royal Holloway College. During these years, I was awarded honorary fellowships in the University of London and Lancaster. That made a total of 14 fellowships. Again, I got on very well with the staff at Royal Holloway College, notably Conrad Singer and David Hayes. Clementi offered me a MoTeC lead writer job in 1988 and allowed me use of the computers again. At this time, we set up our first personal computer from home, the IBM System 2. My relations with Clementi and all staff were always cordial and remain so to this day. In 1989, we transferred to the IBM unit at the Cornell Theory Center, where Malvin Kalos offered me an unpaid visiting position. Again, this was a very productive era, and again I got on fine with all staff. The Cornell Theory Center was founded by the Nobel laureate Ken Wilson. The papers of this era are on the Omnia Opera. In the autumn of 1990, I took up my 15th fellowship as guest of the University of Zurich to work with Georges Wagner and Stanislaw Wozniak, and returned to Cornell in the autumn of 1991. I won my 16th fellowship in open competition at Cornell, my second Leverhulme Trust Fellowship. Cornell produced a quarterly NSF report dedicated entirely to my work. In about November 1991, I inferred the B3 field. Unfortunately, IBM cut back on jobs and we were obliged to move to UNCC. If Cornell had offered me a paid job, as it should have, judging by that report, I would have stayed there. I won the UNCC professorship in open competition with 122 candidates and was awarded the rank of full professor with tenure. It's very tough to win a professorship in this way in the United States. So all seemed to be set fair, although neither my wife nor I liked the move to Charlotte. In the spring of 1992, I won an open competition of a full-tenured professorship at University of North Carolina, Charlotte, after giving an interview lecture on the then-new B3 field. This was a move forced upon me by the fact that Cornell would not pay me a salary, despite featuring my work in a quarterly NSF report, and despite expending months of its resources on an animation of my work, which was given an honorable mention in a supercomputer competition in the US and Canada. At UNCC, I had no further access to supercomputers, so had to rely on theoretical work which developed into O3 electrodynamics, as in the Omnia Opera. My first wife and I were very happily settled in Ithaca, the site of Cornell University. The unhappy personal attacks on me at UNCC are fully recorded in the UNCC saga on AIAS.us. So in this essay I record the scientific advances of that era. These attacks came from the Buckingham Group back in Britain. Buckingham always had an axe to grind and has retired into obscurity, his theoretical ideas largely forgotten, his animosity condemned internationally in the comments on AIAS.us. In the autumn or fall of 1992, a paper on B3 was accepted by Physical Review E, but then unaccepted in a notorious and well-known incident. This was the first sign that B3 would eventually refute the entire standard model, an example of a corrupt editorial establishment resorting to crude censorship, hardly knowing what it was doing. In January 1993, Jean-Pierre Vigier wrote to me from Paris indicating the basic importance of B3 to the theory of photon mass, a theory he had spent his professional life developing with Louis de Broglie and, indirectly, Albert Einstein. He was then an editor of Physics Letters A. He accepted my B3 paper and invited others. But again, the accepted paper was unaccepted, a crudely unethical act by a man called Holland, an assistant to Vigier, without Vigier's knowledge or approval. Again, the importance of B3 became evident because it refuted the entire U1 sector of the standard unified field theory, or what passes as a theory, in those circles, with its ridiculous 20 or so adjustable parameters. Unknown to me at the time, Horwitz and his group had already produced a B3 type theory in 1989, which was published in the Physical Review. The latter made a farce out of itself. The O3 electrodynamical theory was published by Alwin van der Merwe in his meticulously refereed and edited books and journals, as in the Omnia Opera, and also in many other refereed journals. During my short time at UNCC, I outproduced the entire physics department combined, some of its notorious staff putting their names to my papers. One or two later tried to change history and retract this fact. Never has the academic world looked so meaningless as in those years, 1992 to 1995. During the end of that era, in the fall of 1994, John Wheeler sent me a long message accepting the B3 field. I also became aware that Bo Lennart and his group in Stockholm had constructed a B3 type field independently. My first wife and I left Charlotte for Craig Kevin Park here in Wales in about January 1995, when I decided to leave the university sector behind me. A tiny group of bigots in that sector had caused so much mindless trouble. The vast majority of the academic sector now reads all my work avidly, and I am very pleased with this. The problem that sector faces is its control by the ruthless, power-hungry few. Back here, I was able to concentrate on my work undisturbed, with great help from my first wife, a Princeton PhD and multiple IBM award winner. I became aware of Barrett's work, another independent confirmation of B3, and later of Harmuth's work, yet another independent confirmation. The work of that era is on the Omnia Opera, as usual, but was accompanied by considerable malice in the form of hate mail and an early form of cyberstalking. One of these hateful letters was sent to my first wife and upset her a great deal. It was from the notorious Jeffrey Hunter, who was severely reprimanded and retired early. My first wife was threatened by a developer here, and we moved back to Ithaca for her safety. Being of a kind, very intelligent, musically gifted, and highly sensitive nature, She is greatly to be praised for standing up to this ugly hatred until it all became too much for her. Eventually, in January 2001, I returned here to Craig Kevin Park and continued with the transitional phase between O3 electrodynamics and ECE theory, which was inferred in the early months of 2003 when I met my second wife and became happily remarried. Both wives were and are a great help. We withstood the cowardly personal attacks and bigotry. I had formed AIAS in 1998, and now the group began to produce the new unified physics, eventually building up the huge international following it has today. In late 2002, I came across the 1997 notes to the book on general relativity by Sean Carroll, Space-Time and Geometry, An Introduction to General Relativity, published in 2004 by Addison Wesley. Its first three chapters are an excellent account of geometry, but its last few chapters are now refuted entirely because they are based on the completely obsolete Einsteinian general relativity, EGR. I noticed that the first Cartan structure equation in Carroll's chapter 3 looked very similar to the defining equations of the B3 field in O3 electrodynamics. I spent a lot of time learning the Cartan geometry, and in March 2003 started on the series of Unified Field Theory papers, UFT, on AIAS.us. This series now has a huge readership in all sectors of society, and has entirely changed the face of physics and engineering. In 2002, the www.aias.us site had been started with the help of Bob Gray of BioFan Incorporated of New York State, the first webmaster. The second webmaster was Sean McLachlan of Hewlett-Packard Incorporated in Boise, Idaho, who also started the www.atomicprecision.com website. Both became hugely successful in a very short time, outflanking the blocking tactics of a few standard model bigots. The latter were swiftly discredited as scientists. The first 15 papers were published in the well-known Van der Merwe Journal of Foundations of Physics Letters, a journal that had stood up to the mindless bigotry. Each paper was refereed two or three times. From the feedback to AIAS.us, notably the referring URL report, it can be seen that all these 15 papers have been read thousands of times and as time goes on are read more and more. They are based directly on Cartan geometry through some simple hypotheses. The structure of Einstein-Cartan-Evans, ECE theory, is the same exactly as the well-known structure of Cartan geometry, which reduces to Riemann geometry and thence to Euclidean geometry. No one in their right mind would have tried to refute geometry. It can be developed into something more abstract, but a more abstract theory is not needed for physics. The notorious blocking tactics of publishers such as Springer were outflanked thoroughly by the two new ECE websites, which rapidly built up a huge and permanent readership. The academic world accepted ECE theory by quietly ignoring the zealots and fanatics. In UFT 202, we arrived at a clear refutation of all they stood for or pretended to stand for. Albert Einstein himself would have had no problem. He would simply have changed his theory into something like ECE theory. The websites were backed up by Abramis Academic, which published the volumes of Generally Covariant Unified Field Theory, 2005 to 2011, and now by Cambridge International Science Publishing. Both are excellent small presses, fully deserving of support by the profession. The distinguished and intellectually honest Alwin van der Merwe paid a heavy price for his adherence to the principles of science, and his journal was removed by Springer after an illegal campaign of vicious cyberstalking, reminiscent of the 1930s. The same thing happened to Albert Einstein, of course. In 1933, he barely escaped with his life. That cannot be covered up. History cannot be changed. In 2004, I was nominated by the Royal Society for a Civil List pension, and was appointed on the recommendation of Tony Blair in 2005 in an Act of Parliament. This is a British high honour and appointment. Predecessors include Faraday and Hamilton. So the government was able to see through the disinformation. The only thing open to the bigots was to email the Queen. Naturally, she was not amused. These emails never reached her, of course, nor do letter bombs. About this time, David Burley, CEO of Anexa, became the webmaster of www.aias.us and built up the site to what it is today, the most important site in physics and engineering. In 2007, Laufelker published his much-acclaimed book, The Evans Equations of Unified Field Theory, Abramis 2007, translated into Spanish by Alex Hill on www.aias.us. Laufelker introduced me to his colleague Horst Eckhart, who rapidly established himself as a leading ECE scholar. Horst is basically an electrical engineer, although a PhD in chemistry. Our work has just culminated in the appearance of the world's first space energy devices. ECE theory was the first to show that these devices do not violate the conservation of energy. To any real scientist, this fact is obvious. Energy is transferred from space-time to a device. Total energy is conserved. People who fail to see that are either ignorant of physics entirely or indulging in disinformation, a very easy and pointless thing to do. We were joined by other capable colleagues such as Dr. Douglas Lindstrom, and gradually the AIAS group crystallized into a very productive and efficient institute, among the best in the world of physics, not only at present, but also for the foreseeable future. We built up a unique database of feedback which shows clearly that the impact is not only unprecedented, but here to stay. The bigots, stalkers, and anonymous zealots are terribly exposed by UFT 202. They are forced into a position of denying schoolboy algebra, and if they do that much longer, will be ridiculed entirely by contemporaries and history alike. Lately, this narrator, Robert Cheshire, has completed a series of professional broadcasts of these essays, and these are heard around the world every day. Alex Hill has translated many papers and essays into Spanish, where they are avidly read and heard.